So I guess 25, 30 years ago, the idea of a percussion soloist was it even novel then? Did it even exist? It seems that you and Evelyn Glennie have kind of invented this thing and have become very well known in the process.
Yes, well, I think it was something that was galvanizing importance and effectiveness as a genre in the 70s, perhaps, and certainly the 80s, very definitely the 90s, and now it's just exploded. The standard of young players coming through is quite extraordinary, and the sheer volume of fine players and interesting repertoire is just amazing. It's just wonderful to hear and see and be part of.
But to make the decision, because you were both very pioneering, to make the decision that you weren't going to go and sit at the back of the band, so to speak, that you were going to be part of this, you know, cadre of people who make their living by being the front person of the orchestra for certain pieces. That must have been brave.
Well, I was initially an orchestral player myself, and I trained very much as a section player. And I was developing on the side, if you like, my solo playing. And I didn't know how it was going to roll. I didn't see for sure there was a path in front of me to become a soloist. But gradually over time, in my early 20s, it became clear that in actual fact, it might be, you know, go time. You know, an opportunity to put all my eggs in that basket seemed to be there. So since that time, I've never looked back. So I've now been a full-time soloist for well over a decade.
And contemporary composers have embraced the idea of the percussion concerto with open arms. There's so much more material out there than there would have been even when you were starting out.
Yeah, there's an extraordinary amount of new quality repertoire. For example, the last time I was here, I premiered the Jennifer Higdon Concerto, which is one of my very favourite and most...
And most Grammy-winning as well.
Most Grammy-winning, there you go. Thank you for... Yeah, that's definitely a good way to finish that sentence. Most Grammy-winning... of my works. But since then, I've had a brace of further premieres, and things just continue to develop and diversify. So what I like, and what I've always liked, and what's fascinated me about working with composers is the depth and diversity of their styles. So I have both ends of the spectrum covered in some ways, because I have one end worked with Elliot Carter on a new work, and at the other end I received a new concerto which I premiered by Julia Wolf. Two composers from New York, basically nothing in common, but both united by having written a percussion concerto.
And more in the works for you as well. You have Steve Reich writing something right now?
Yes, I developed my own ensemble over the past few years since I was in Philadelphia. So in 2006, this group made its debut, and that was at the BBC Proms in the Albert Hall. And I decided that I'd really make a go of this and develop that group. And we've really made a great stab at this. We are ambassadors very much for one of Steve Reich's key works, Drumming, which we play regularly, often, and in really important cities like Tokyo and Amsterdam and London. And Steve has heard us play, and I've got to know him very, very well. And he's writing me a new piece now, which will be part of that ensemble's repertoire. And that is very much on the up and up.
Let's talk about this piece that you're performing in Philadelphia. It's almost a decade and a half old. Tell us about who the character is and who you're playing, because not only are you playing the piece of music, but you're supposedly also playing a character, right?
Yes. who knows what goes on inside the mind of Christopher Rouse? but he, when he was approached about writing a percussion concerto, he thought long and hard about it, and there's often a conceit to his pieces, or it's a background story. And in this case, he decided, well, I wonder what happens to Alberich at the end of the Ring cycle. He's pretty much the one who sets the whole 12-hour saga in motion. So, and he's pretty much last man standing.
And his fate is unresolved, right?
Yes, we don't quite know what happens to him. There are hints. But Chris Rouse has solved it, because Alberich, in fact, goes on to be a world-dominating, world-beating percussionist. And the one concrete image he very definitely had in mind was that it was clear that Albrecht would serve a stint in a 70s rock band. So that's what happens at the beginning of Movement 3 when I sit behind the drum kit. Albrecht gets his
John Bonham moment.
He gets his John Bonham on, yeah.
When you're playing, I mean, are you totally focused on what's been written, or are you allowed to have some fun with this? Are you allowed to get into character? Is there an amount of acting that's going on in this piece?
Well, no. We draw the line there. I don't think Chris wants any histrionics or amateur dramatics or costumes or whatever else. But I get into the spirit of the thing. And the one thing that, in terms of the instruments, that's a little bit pictorial, perhaps, is the use of the güiros, which are scrapers. And when I first play them at the beginning of my entry in the piece, that does suggest someone kind of dusting themselves off or wheezing or scratching or having a bit of a rasp. So that is a little bit theatrical, if you like. And also the music itself is quite descriptive of something quite specific. So at that moment, it's fairly locked into this image of Albrecht suddenly realizing that he's still up and running and he's perhaps got away with it all and he can now go on to enjoy himself. And then when the music really takes hold in the first scherzando allegro, it's down to more abstract music and Albrecht is safely installed at the drums and we get on with business of playing the concerto.
A lot of work has been commissioned for you and you're commissioning a lot of work, and clearly that being the case, it's with living composers. How special a skill is it for a composer to be able to write for percussion? Because clearly most of them are not percussionists, right?
That's correct indeed. Christopher Rouse has been something of a percussionist in the past, but most of the composers I write that write for me are ones who I feel have a good ear for percussion. Some of them didn't realize they had a percussion concerto in them. For example, Eino Juhani Rautavaara is the elder statesman Finnish composer, and he writes this wonderful rhapsodic, lyrical music, very rich, very lush, not a percussion instrument in sight. I was determined he would write something for me, and he really got the bug for this and wrote me an amazing concerto, quite unlike anything in the repertoire. So the affinity with percussion can come later.
So is there then something that, how do I ask this diplomatically? Well, I won't. Is there a rookie mistake that composers are likely to make when they're writing a percussion concerto? Because I'm guessing the first impulse is make it loud and make it fast.
Well, I don't know about that. I think that's the thing that composers want to avoid the most. I mean, they all say to me, most of the ones I choose to work with anyway, they say the last thing I want is one of the kitchen sink pieces where you're standing in front of every instrument under the sun and they all get played once and you're just moving around like a showroom. I think that's the overriding thing that composers I work with at least want to avoid. So rookie errors, I don't know. What I say to them is, write your utopian piece, even if you feel it's maybe turning out difficult. Well, then we'll edit it and rein it in if necessary. Or
and do you get unplayable scores?
Well, it's often to do with the tempo as well. Sometimes I get many notes and then the tempo is very fast as well. So sometimes we have to have a meeting in the middle. Either we reduce the tempo or we reduce the number of notes.
And then you talked about this kitchen sink mentality. There's an infinite variety of instruments that you can be required to play, up to and including the piano, right?
Yes. There's even a piece coming for me soon in which I might be playing the Celeste. So I'm quite looking forward to that. I actually really like the core percussion sounds. So I think marimba is a fine... All the mallet instruments are very fine and have a rich sound. The marimba is a very important instrument to me and to most composers that I work with. And I like still to play multiple percussion setups of the fairly standard sounds. Like in the Rouse, he uses them very, very well. Blocks, different types of drums, timbales, bongos, tom-toms, the pedal bass drum, log drums, did I say? These are very good sounds, and if they can be combined effectively, and if you think carefully about which mallets to use, so which eventual color will come out of the instruments, then these are rich and interesting sounds to work with.
Okay, final question, probably a really dumb question, but if somebody came to you with a percussion concerto that involved only one instrument, and that instrument was the piano, would you accept it?
It depends how tricky it was. I mean, the piano is an extremely different instrument. It is technically a percussion instrument, but it has a skill set that belongs to a different race of instrumentalists. So
Some would say the more limited percussionists, actually. They only play one instrument.
Well, I'm definitely going to not let this be turned into me having any kind of anything bad to say about my colleagues on the piano. But I would be interested by that. Actually, I had a friend who even thought at one point, he went on to write something else, but he thought about writing me a piece in which I would play mostly the piano, but it would involve playing it very much as a percussion instrument, and it would involve getting inside the piano and making sound effects in there. But I would also have to play the keyboard for a lot of the piece as well. And who knows, that could still happen.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.